Welcome to the MTR Network. We are here for a very special Captain Marvel spoiler review. I'm calling this one Ladies Night because I have my ladies with me. I have two of my friends. The first one is Sarah. Sarah is a aficionado, expert, I would say, on Captain Marvel and Carol Danvers, a huge member of the Carol Corps, also a freelance writer and comic book historian herself. And I have my other friend, Mariah, who I met a year and a half ago at Rose City Comic Con. Mariah is a comic editor, also just super awesome, dope person who knows a lot of shit. And we are here to talk all things Captain Marvel. I brought these two ladies on because they are particularly knowledgeable about Kelly Sue DeConnick's run of Captain Marvel, which the movie largely pulls from. So I am going to start with Sarah. Sarah, can you talk a little bit more about yourself and your experience with Captain Marvel, and also let us know what was your favorite part of the movie?
So I discovered Captain Marvel, Kelly Sue's run, at least at the very end of her run. I ended up with some time to pass one weekend in Portland and drove around collecting 1 through 17, because they weren't collected in trade at that point. So the only way to get the whole thing was to drive around and find all the single issues. And I think I read them all in about 3 or 4 hours. And since then, I've just been a great fan. Carol spoke to me specifically because she's stubborn. She's very stubborn. She thinks she knows what's right. It's not always the right thing, but she's always willing to kind of push through, correct mistakes, work with people, and come out on the side of caring for everyone involved. And so I really identified with that. But I think really what it was the letter in the first issue that Helen Cobb writes to Carol as a goodbye. Helen Cobb is her mentor in the comics in the Air Force, the woman whose record she challenges when Carol's flying planes. So there was a lot that Kelly Sue DeConnick put into that first issue that really, really grabbed me from the very beginning. And to that end, my favorite part of the movie is a toss up between seeing Carol fly for the first time, when she hits the stratosphere, and you can just you see the joy on her face. When I say that, part of it is when she's flying in her suit, but also actually the most meaningful moment is the moment that she hits weightlessness with Maria in the cockpit when they're flying and they hit space for the first time and they look at each other. And that moment is so meaningful because there's been so many movies about men going into space and seeing men kind of interact with that first moment of weightlessness and wonder, and to see that moment exchanged between two women who know planes and know flying, and like this was their element, that was really beautiful for me. I think the runner-up is probably the reveal of Annette Bening's character. I cried a whole lot. I did not see that coming. And switching up Mar-Vell to be a woman was, I think, one of the most meaningful changes to me that they'd made to the storyline to put in the movie.
Okay. I got like all teary just listening. Mariah, tell us about your experience with Captain Marvel and what was your favorite part of the film?
Okay, I have to stop tearing up here first. So I started reading Captain Marvel when the first issue came out. I was working at a comic book store in Berkeley, and maybe I wasn't quite working there yet, but I was a regular and would answer people's questions. So I saw it, I knew it was coming, and I was following Kelly Sue's work because I had heard about her through various routes. And I was really interested to see what she would have to say about a character who had historically been male, giving Carol Danvers the title of Captain Marvel instead of Ms. Marvel. And it seemed like something that I really needed to read. And the first issue definitely cemented that. As Sarah said, it was a really emotional experience. And it feels today still like a really strongly emotionally cementing moment. That moment when Carol really decides that this is something that she wants to do, that she's not a pilot, she's not something else, is that she's choosing to use her abilities and be a good person, a power for change in the world. So, however, later on in the run, there's a storyline where Carol is dealing with the after effects of using her powers, and she's dealing with issues of memory and also terrible things going on with her head. Basically, she's grounded, and as a person who's dealing with an illness that has to do with neurologic stuff, with basically problems in my brain, reading a storyline of a comic book that dealt with problems in one's brain was super touching. And I think that's probably why one of my favorite moments in the movie was when she is in with the supreme intelligence, who is basically being taking form of her mentor, played by Annette Bening, and she's really truly at a loss for what to do, and she's trying to escape. She's basically trapped in there, and she just breaks free. And it's that same feeling of being trapped in your own head and being able to break free. So she's doing that in this construct that the Supreme Intelligence has created in her mind. And she breaks free in the real world. That things that happen in the brain have real world consequences is a pretty cool concept to explore, and one that's important to talk about. And I'm so delighted that Kelly Sue has done that in the comics and that they managed to translate that for the movie.
Yeah. For me, there's so many amazing moments in the film. I talked a little bit about this on the, we're doing a special premium episode about Kelly Sue's run of Captain Marvel. We still have to do part two of that. I kind of came to the Captain Marvel comics just because I love Kelly Sue's writing, and I wanted to see her take on a traditional superhero. And obviously what's amazing about her writing is that it's always a way deeper than just a superhero story. It's always way more than just, you know, punching big villains. And what I love about her writing is it always comes down to the relationships and the heart of the story. So in the comics, Carol has a very close friendship with her friend's daughter, Kit. And to see that translated onto the big screen And for them to kind of take that character and the mother character and make them two Black women, I think that really spoke to me, because that it was already my favorite relationship in the comics, and then they made it a little Black girl. So that just profoundly affected me. And I think just in terms of a moment where, I don't know, I just clapped in the theater and just kind of lost it. When Just a Girl started playing during the fight scene, I know there's so many people talking to you about pandering and fake feminism and all this other stuff when it comes to this movie. Pander to me. In that moment, it was like one of my favorite No Doubt songs. It's all about, you know, being a woman and just wrecking shit and not caring. And that moment just, it made me so happy. I was actually upset because I felt like the music should have been louder. Like, I just wanted it to go.
So. Well, Shanna, you've probably got a first there in that I'm in a movie theater, but I really want it to be louder.
So I've seen it twice. I saw it in a regular theater, and then I went and saw it at IMAX, and it was definitely louder in the IMAX and still not loud enough.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted to be, I wanted to sing out loud, and I wanted to be able to sing out loud and not ruin anyone else's experience. That's how loud
I recommend seeing it in the Dolby theater then, because holy crap, was that loud. And also your seat vibrates. And I don't recommend that for every movie, but for Captain Marvel, it's like you're experiencing the intensity of the music along with the people in the movie. It was fantastic. And I saw it twice. I saw Captain Marvel on a Thursday night, and then just recently on Saturday again at a different theater that did not have the extra sound. And I have to say, I agree. It was better, louder.
First of all, the soundtrack is amazing. It's every song from the 90s that if you didn't love it yourself, you heard it a million times. So you know it like by heart. And I wanted to sing along every single time. And I was just like, these people around me probably hate me already. Because I screamed when I saw Kelly Sue's little cameo. I screamed Kelly Sue's name in the theater.
I definitely yipped really loud. I even knew it was coming, and I was like, ah!
It's like, yeah. So weird. Because I'm sure the majority of people who went to see that movie this past weekend had no idea. Because most people don't know comic book writers, let alone what they look like, enough to recognize them doing a cameo.
And the look on her face is such a classic Kelly Sue look that it was perfect.
Yeah. If anyone were going to know what a comic book writer looks like, though, it is definitely Kelly Sue. I've been in Entertainment Weekly DeConnick.
True. True. Fair. Also, I didn't realize that she was writing Aquaman currently. So she was also at the Aquaman premiere back in December. Hey, I'm sorry. Like, oh, we stand a queen. We stand a legend.
Yeah, she is my hero. I am a full on Kelly Sue DeConnick fangirl. That's absolutely my identity.
Yeah. And Sarah, if you're not following her on Twitter, if you're not following her on Instagram, please do yourself a favor. Twitter is just full of hilarious, comedic, witty bon mots, and then her Instagram is just adorable pictures of her and her family. So yeah, rectify that situation if you're not following her on either of those platforms. So we got to talk a little bit about the connection between the comics and what we saw on screen. There was the Kit situation, which they brought to the Monica Maria relationship. And then there was the big change of making Mar-Vell a woman.
Hell yes.
Oh my God. I thought that Annette Bening was going to be Helen Cobb or Tracy, right? Like, mm-hmm. I thought it was that Annette Bening's character was going to be one of the two older women that Carol Danvers in the comic books identifies as her mentors. But I think I caught my breath. Like, I don't think I breathed for a second after that reveal. Like, I was just so touched and impressed that whoever was writing it had managed to convince Marvel to make that change.
Absolutely. And did you notice how many of the writers were women and that the director is also a woman? Because I hadn't done a lot of research beforehand. I figured I'm just going to go into this movie knowing that I like the character Captain Marvel and not doing a ton of research beforehand. And then as the credits are rolling, I'm like, yes. And that is why there's no male gaze in this movie. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that is why Mar-Vell is a woman and why it is important that she's a woman. And that it's important that Carol chooses the thing that ends up giving her magical photon beams from all over her body. But she chooses to blow up the engine. And it's not something that's done to her. She doesn't know it's going to happen, but she's choosing in that moment to do what she does. And that for me was also a key moment in there, the ability for Carol Danvers to be self-determining.
Yeah, I thought making Mar-Vell a woman and making it Annette Bening. I mean, like Annette Bening.
Right.
Who is
like badass
and fabulous. I remember when the EW, like when they first would like first look at Captain Marvel and they released the pictures and it was like the Skrulls coming out of the water and, you know, it was Jude Law and the whole Kree team. So everybody was like, oh, the Kree suit. Oh, Jude Law must be Mar-Vell because it's Jude Law. He's one of the biggest names and he's in this Kree suit. So everybody was just like, Jude Law, Mar-Vell. Got it. Like, this is going to be awesome.
That was my assumption from day one, pretty much.
Yeah. So when it turns out to be Annette Bening, and there were so many points in this movie that I saw coming, like when they kept calling her Verse, I was like, why are you calling her? And then I was like, oh, fuck. They found like half of her thing and they think her name is Verse. Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
I was like, oh damn it. And like I saw these things coming. So like I'm like in the theater, like whispering to my friend. I'm like, that's Kelly Sue. Oh, and they think her name is because her last name is Danvers. And I was like, I'm like telling my friend all the things that are coming up. But even with all of that, there was no way I was gonna guess that Annette Bening is Mar-Vell. I'm thinking, well, she's some sort of Helen Cobb stand-in. I'm like, oh, they made her part of this whole, she's not just a pilot, she's also a scientist. And the flashback kept showing her blowing up the engine. So I thought, again, like you said, like it was going to be something that was done to her, something that, you know, Carol had no choice in. And to see that moment of her choosing that, her choosing when she decides to be a part of Project Pegasus, because she's like, this is the only way I'll get to do the thing that I love. And then when she has that moment against the Supreme Intelligence and you realize that the whole time they're telling her, you have to control your emotions. You have to control your emotions. That will make you a better fighter. It'll make you a better warrior. They were holding her back the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have that
moment. And doesn't that. Sorry, I was going to say, doesn't that feel like people on the internet who are like, you're too emotional about this, and they're tone policing you?
Yeah.
They were tone policing her powers.
Yeah, or every job I've ever had that was in a male-dominated environment.
Yes. And the whole movie is about her choosing something different, her not even always knowing why she's making that choice or who she is, but knowing deep down what the right choice is to make.
Because, you know, she was fully prepared to die when she shot that engine, right?
Like, exactly.
That's the decision that she's making. That's so powerful, right? Like, she was already willing at that moment to self-sacrifice, but on her own terms, right?
And this is also moments after she just found out that her mentor is not even human. Like, that happened all in the same moment where she just, but she believed enough in what she was telling her that I'm here to help people and that you have to continue my work. She believed it all. Like, she might not have known the whole story, might not have known everything she had to do, but she knew she couldn't let this guy get to this work. It was too important.
Well, and also not refusing to be gaslit in that moment, right? Like I can tell that you're my enemy because you're shooting at me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not gonna talk yourself out of this one.
I love it. So there's been talk from Kevin Feige that the next Captain Marvel movie, which they've already said there is another one coming, the next Captain Marvel movie might take place before Endgame. So it might be in that time between when she leaves at the end of the movie and when she comes back.
That would be really fascinating to see.
Like, yeah.
I want to see a powered up Carol Danvers going back to Hala, knowing what she knows.
Same. You know, one of the other things that I also was fascinated with in the movie was the way the costume designers melded Jamie McKelvey's original Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers design with Chris Anka's later another reboot Captain Marvel design. Because Marvel can never stop with the number ones.
They love them, a number one.
But choosing to meld some of the best elements of both suit designs and then make it something a little bit more wearable to the real world, in that, you know, you have to see the seams and the piping and so forth. It's not going to be flat. A seam like that isn't going to be flat. And then choosing to do something with it. And her and Lieutenant Trouble, their playing with the suit colors together was one of my favorite sort of fun, let's take a lighthearted breather moment before we go back to like war and possible death. And they're playing with the suit colors and like going that black and neon for a minute. I was dying laughing, and I so appreciate that there's so many elements of humor throughout the movie, because there are so many elements of humor throughout the comic as well. It just felt so honest as a woman's experience that you have to diffuse some situations with humor, because the other option is like straight out murder.
I loved all of the Easter eggs in those colors too. Like ending on the original green and white of the original Captain Marvel, the Kree green and white that you get right before they go for the Air Force blue, gold, and red colors. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the colors that they cycle through is white and black variation. That could be a big hint to some things coming up with Monica's character. So,
yes,
I appreciated those nods. Yeah.
They did such a good job with the Easter eggs. And you know what? The minute that they mentioned Torfa, I should have known where they were going with the squirrels. I should have figured that out.
Yeah, I did not figure that twist out either. That one came out of left field for me. I was like, whoa. And also, A plus, let's have a race of beings in the movies who look alien and are coded as black, who are not the bad guys.
Yeah.
So that was good. The human approximating Kree turn out to be much worse.
Yes. Yeah. And it was funny because given all of my Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. watching, I knew things weren't adding up correctly throughout the whole entire movie. Like when she was explaining to Fury and she's like, yeah, we're a race of warrior heroes. And I was like, are you really though? Not really sure about that. But I was not expecting the Skrulls to be the good guys either. I just was kind of like, I was looking at it more as they were using Earth to like have their little alien battle.
Yeah, it's sort of secret invasion-ish, right?
Yeah.
But not quite, but in that realm, right? Where like Earth is sort of ground zero for somebody else's war. Yeah, I was expecting that. And I was, though I think that it's really important too, that at a certain point, Talos makes the point of saying, you know, my hands are like, I'm as filthy as anyone. My hands are as dirty as anyone's in this. Like, just because I was like, one of my friends after seeing the movie came to me and was like, wait, I read some of the comics. I thought the Skrulls were the bad guys. And I'm like, well, actually, if you read the comics, it really depends on the point of view of the comic you're reading at the time.
Sure and does.
I think that translates that the way that they translated that into like, yes, in this story from this perspective, the Skrulls are the good guys, quote unquote, but their hands are still not clean. Like we are still talking about war. And I think Fury alludes to that a little bit too in the car scene, right? Like not as directly, but still like, he's like, I know what war looks like. I know what soldiers look like, right? Like we know what war looks like. I appreciated that kind of nod to the grayness of just being involved in that level of conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people are getting hurt no matter what. And there are innocent people who did not sign up to be part of a war who get hurt. It happens. And the fact that they acknowledge that in a movie that has a beginnings in somebody who is from the military, that's pretty astounding. I can't think of any other movie where the main character is former Air Force, where they talk about people having dirty hands on both sides, you know?
Yeah, very much.
All right, we are going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the controversy surrounding Captain Marvel. It's not even really a controversy, but people are mad, and we're going to talk about it.
What if you're more than you think you're meant to be? What if you're right? Arun Kerala is a 16-year-old Muslim boy. He is also the reincarnation of Jesus. But discovering your teenage godhead isn't easy. Arun goes on a journey of self-discovery. He faces villains both supernatural and societal. He is Young God. Young God is the original comic project written by MTR Network's Shanna and illustrated by artist Tara Simone. You can support this original comic story at patreon.com/younggod. Check out younggod.mtrnetwork.net for more information.
All right, so we got to talk about, and by we gotta, I mean, honestly, we should just ignore them, but we're going to talk a little bit around the controversy around Captain Marvel So basically, folks, and by folks, I mean mostly men, were already mad that we were getting another female-led thing because the women with their vaginas, and why do they get to be superheroes? And I actually saw this one guy. He wasn't even one of the worst ones, but he was just kind of like, well, I just don't understand why they didn't do Mar-Vell. And, you know, he's such a big part of the comics. And I was like, well, actually, Mar-Vell is in the movie. And also, you know, if you've read anything recently, Captain Marvel is a big part of the universe and particularly interacts with all of the characters they've already introduced in the films. And he was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I haven't read the comics since, like, the 80s. And I was like, well, maybe you shouldn't be commenting this.
I feel like these fake geek boys and their knees on a movie they haven't seen a year ago already. We're talking.
Hold on, you're breaking up a little bit. You're breaking up a little bit, Mariah. Try refreshing. All right, try now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I back?
Yeah,
hello?
Much better. Yeah.
I think my internet dropped and came back. Yay, technology.
Sorry. Hold on. Let me just grab my Tesseract. I'll get you straightened out.
Yeah. So we've had 20 Marvel movies with a male lead. This is the first Marvel movie with a female lead. And there's problems with it because one out of 21 is somehow too much representation.
Yeah. They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know we've been asking for a Black Widow movie, but she at least unzips her costume down to halfway to her boobs. So that we
exactly. And, you know, in a possibly male-directed Black Widow movie, you get plenty of butt shots. Like, I'm sorry, we can't have just male gaze movies either. Let's at least go for equal opportunity. Like, Chris Anka's Captain Marvel, it gives everyone equal opportunity to have hella abs, right?
Look, I'm not going to diss Marvel because I feel like they throw in a unnecessary ab scene every single movie. And I assume that they do that for me. So I appreciate
I mean, I've heard, and somebody can Google it, but I've heard that actually Chris Hemsworth argued that Thor would naturally take his shirt off when he was washing after he was in a fight. And so the Thor 2 shirtless scene is because Chris Hemsworth argued for it. So you, Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
That Thor, the first ab shot in the first Thor movie was everything. Like, I feel like the first time I saw that on some kind of digital situation that I had control over, I rewound it and watched it like 5 or 6 times just cause I was like, this is the female gaze that millennials want.
And the thing about it too, is that given that Marvel does give us a unnecessary, there was a scene in Ant-Man 2 where they just show Paul Rudd's chest for no reason. I was like, we, this scene did not need this, but thank you. They could have used that as an excuse to have some scene where, like, you know, Carol is in a steamy shower, you know, or, you know, putting on an extra tight, you know, tank top or something like that. And they did not. They actually held themselves back from giving us any of that, which I know will probably make the men even more mad. And she barely smiles, although I thought every single time she smiled, it was adorable and great.
Yeah, I mean, we got Jude Law chest, but yes. You know, so I was all for that. I'm like, yes, let's go for equal opportunity gazing here.
One of the criticisms that I was alerted to yesterday that I thought was particularly hilarious that I guess was in the backlash for the picture that Tom King, right, mm-hmm. posted of his son, like going to see Captain Marvel, his tiny little son looking up at the giant Carol Danvers as they're getting ready to go into the movie. And like one of the troll responses was that the movie was particularly emasculating for Samuel L. Jackson. And one of their core pieces of evidence was that you see Fury doing dishes at the end of the movie. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Sam Jackson has never looked sexier to me than he did when he was singing Postman into that scrubber. Like, come on, you guys.
So what is so funny about the Sam Jackson thing is somebody, there was some website that was like, Sam Jackson was castrated by Captain Marvel. Like, Nick Fury was castrated. And I saw the best tweet that was like, wow, I really need to stay all the way to the end to see all the end credit scenes. <I'm this
laughs> Some of this is just astounding to me, and the past couple days on Twitter has been interesting, to say the least. But the thing that gets me the most is most of the people making these comments, one, haven't seen the movie, and two, don't read the comics now. Mm-hmm. Why is anybody else's enjoyment of this such a problem? Just don't watch it or read it like you already do.
It's this need to control what comes out. And then on top of it, Brie Larson made the mistake. You cannot see the air quotes that I'm doing right now. The mistake of suggesting that maybe when we do press for this movie, there be some people of color, some women interviewing her, because she noticed that whenever she went to do press interviews, it was mainly white men. And then, you know what she did? She went and looked at some research about that and found out that, yes, a significant number of movie reviewers and critics are white men. And she said, for my press tour for Captain Marvel, I would really like to see more people of color and more women on the press line. And
see,
white men interpreted it that as Brie Larson doesn't want white men to come see her movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or control the narrative about her movie, right? Because you know that if it was a bunch of white guys doing all of the interviews, that they'd ask her, you know, just about the costume and, you know, what it was like to be acting with all of these other actors. Like, you know, what's it like to be acting with Sam Jackson? Well, she's really clear about what her relationship is with Jackson because this is their third movie together. They're friends. Like, and it's obvious because I watched her interview on Jimmy Kimmel Live. And that's what they talked about, right? They talked about Samuel L. Jackson. They talked about her costume. Like, this is the range, this is the limited range of questions that she was going to get. But, you know, in other interviews, she got to talk about her relationship with Maria. She got to talk about what it was like to like, for her to buff up for this role and what it took physically and what, like, how much she put into it physically to be able to feel like Captain Marvel, like what it was like to put on the mantle of this character. And that's the kind of stuff that means a lot more to me in an interview than like, what is it like to hang out with Sam? Cause I mean, who wouldn't want to hang out with Sam?
And what I love about that opening up that conversation, like, you get different types of questions. I know for me, when I go into a press room, I'm not saying this to be like, oh, I'm the bomb.com or whatever. But I know I ask different questions than the people mm-hmm. around me. Because I will sit at a press table and they will ask the same five questions. They have a list of stock questions. When I am going to interview people, especially if the actor is of color or it's a woman, I'm like, okay, like, tell me about your motivation. Tell me what you had to do to get into, like, let's get deep. Like, and also, you know, little, you know, peek under the cover there. A lot of times people haven't actually done any research about the thing. So, yep. You know, I try to only take interviews or do press rooms where I am knowledgeable about the thing, or if I have time to become knowledgeable about the thing, because I won't just ask you, what is it like to hang out with Sam Jackson? Or what is it like to put on a suit? First of all, the answer to that for anybody who does a superhero movie is uncomfortable. We have seen answer that question a million times. Yes, the suit was uncomfortable. Moving on.
I think Bree's response to Kimmel was like, well, why don't we put you in it and see how you feel? Like, and that was perfect.
I feel like I now want to see Jimmy Kimmel in a superhero suit, preferably one of the ones that has some extra body armor on it, because that's even less comfortable.
Yeah, I'm like, they're not comfortable. They're just not. Like, no matter what. I feel so bad for poor Sebastian Stan, who has to put that arm on.
Oh, I know.
Because, you know, it's musty inside that arm.
Oh, I never even thought about that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah.
It's like having to put a cast on and take it off like every day.
Yeah. So Brie Larson, despite all of the controversy, has been just on an amazing We Did It, We're the Best tour all weekend. She visited theaters in the Bay Area because she was here in the Bay Area. I'm so upset that I was not able to see Brie Larson this weekend.
Hard same.
Yeah, I was like, wait, why wasn't she in Northwest Indiana? I mean, come on, that's like a hotbed.
That's clearly where all the Captain Marvel fans are.
Totally.
As soon as you're a 50-minute flight from LA.
Yeah, exactly. And
can I just say real quick, like, where can I get that tracksuit?
Same. The tracksuit is amazing. If you have not seen Brie Larson's Captain Marvel tracksuit, go and Google it immediately. And then if you know where to find it and you know who I am, just, like, PM me, right?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Because it's ridiculous. I want that tracksuit. So as of right now, or as of yesterday, the 10th, the official domestic box office was a little over $153 million. Worldwide, the box office is at $456 million.
Hell yes.
See, this is the part where I start getting choked up.
And some men were afraid that people wouldn't come out to see this movie because it had a female lead. Oh, I'm sorry. Did it just beat out most of the other Marvel movies? Yes, it did.
It's, I mean, there, because I feel like this is going to sound bad, but I'm going to say it. I feel like some of these same men are also DC fans. This is about to blow all of the DC movies out of the water.
Wow, Shanna, way to call out the DC fans.
I feel like every single time I see somebody talking about, like, why Zack Snyder's BVS is the best comic book movie ever, it's the same, like, the Venn diagram is a circle. The same men who are saying Captain Marvel is, like, a horrible feminine. I saw so many reviews with men being like, Captain Marvel is good, but it doesn't do anything for feminism. Thank you, man.
Yeah, right?
For telling me about what Captain Marvel does for feminism. Really appreciate it.
And that's not to say that there aren't some very legitimate critiques to be had of this Captain Marvel movie. Like, I love it, right? It's I think my review is, it may not be artistically the best, air quotes, Marvel MCU movie to date, but it is hands down my favorite. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of reasonable critiques, both about the movie, about how it was marketed. I think it's very reasonable to bring up how much effort was put into supporting all of the merchandising for this movie versus, like, say, Black Panther. Like, I think while I'm not here to compare, like, Wonder Woman with Captain Marvel or, like, Black Panther with Captain Marvel, I think there are some legitimate critiques with how the merchandising and the capitalism behind it really kind of are still highlighting the white supremacy and the very white centric reality of the money behind the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot to talk about there that is very legitimate, but we're going to talk about it in smart ways. We're going to you can talk about ways that it let you down, but also still love the movie.
And I think part of it too is when we talk about ways that the movie let you down or wasn't as good, we also have to critique our barometer, because I saw so many people being like, well, it wasn't the best Marvel movie ever, and it wasn't, you know, the best female-led movie ever, which, I mean, we can argue about that. But
wait,
does it
have to be both of those things, exactly, or either of them at all? Can't it just be a really good movie?
Exactly. This idea that, first of all, this idea that men get to decide whether or not it's the best Marvel movie or it's the best superhero movie or whatever is kind of ridiculous, because Brie Larson said it nicely. I'm just going to say it straight out. I don't care about men's opinions of this movie. So I just don't. But then also the fact that it somehow has to be the best movie. It has to be the best Marvel movie. It has to be the best female-led superhero movie. It has to be the best in order to be good. It can't just be good. It has to be the best in order to just be considered good.
That's such a I'm so tired of hearing that. Any person who identifies as a woman who's been the only woman in the room is so tired of hearing that. Any person of color or woman of color who's been the only person in the room knows that feeling. Like, we live that pressure at different levels. Like, I kind of didn't want Captain Marvel to be perfect.
Nothing that humans make is absolutely perfect for every person who's going to consume whatever media that is. However, if we think about the ways that the movie does hit its target, i.e. it tells a story that is compelling and interesting, and you get to the end and you're not like, wow, I just wasted my $20 at the movies going to see this. Like, you could have seen Feeling Minnesota at home and seen a terrible movie, but no, you went to see Captain Marvel. You know, there are plenty of bad movies if you want to talk about bad movies, but if we're comparing Captain Marvel to even just superhero movies, we have already had at least 8 different Superman movies, and I can't even count how many Batman movies there are. So many so that people talk about which Superman they prefer. We don't have that luxury. Which Wonder Woman movie do you prefer? The only one that's been around so far. Like, come on. Just let us have one little corner. We're not taking up your own space. This isn't in place of another movie that would have been made, but the money isn't there for it, because clearly we're getting Avengers Endgame and probably Iron Man 4, 5, 6, and 7.
I would just like to point out that I hope none of the Feeling Minnesota fans come after us for these comments.
Being a Minnesotan, it's just the first movie that I think of when I think of movies that I wanted to be better but weren't. And I still love Keanu Reeves anyway.
We've had 3 Spider-Mans in my lifetime. 3 entire ones. and they're all like still living. They're not. It's like at least with Superman, you know, like if Christopher Reeves was still alive, he'd be like in his 60s. like any of these men could play Spider-Man again. They're still that young. So to be upset that like this female-led superhero movie wasn't the best, we are lucky enough to live in a time where we're gonna get more. They're only gonna continue to develop this character. I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, the big telling point was my first viewing was in my local theater. I live in a small town. We've only got one theater. It was the very first showing, opening night on Thursday. And we got to the theater and it was full. Like, I was probably the only person there who was very visibly Carol Core. Like, I went in my Elhoffer dress. I was carrying my goose doll. Like, I had my hair done up. I was very obviously part of the Carol Core. And surrounded by average Thursday night, I'd say MCU movie fans, right? Some people were talking about Carol like they knew her, but most people were just talking about the MCU in general. And the way the audience reacted as soon as the credits hit, and just to hear an auditorium full of MCU fans and how excited they were about Carol and how excited they were about Endgame and like the whole next phase of the Marvel Universe. Like, that's where it's at. That's what it's about. And that also made me cry.
We all got emotional.
I'm tearing up again thinking about that. Thank you, Sarah. You have access to my emotions at all times, unfortunately. I agree.
I think the only mistake Marvel made with this movie was not letting me purchase Endgame tickets as soon as it ended.
Absolutely. Because yeah, they should have been on sale that weekend.
I walked out. I was just like, so I'm going to see this about 10 more times before Endgame comes out, but I need to purchase my tickets now.
So between now and April 28th, how many more times can you see Captain Marvel?
So this is the problem that I'm having right now. My next 10 days are so busy that I'm probably only going to get to see it one more time in those 10 days. But then I think the following week, I'm going to see it like 5 times in a row.
I've already got tickets for round 3. I'm going on Wednesday. And really, it's because I have a bunch of friends and everybody's like, all right. And they've been great. Like, I really appreciate people who've been like, I realize we can't all see it with you opening weekend. That's a bit much. So just like parsing out viewings with groups of friends. So third viewing is Wednesday. I'm going to be traveling this next weekend, not to Emerald City, much to my chagrin, but I know it's weird being not on the West Coast this year, but might even see it a fourth time this weekend. I have spent so much money on official Carol merchandise because I could. I literally am probably one of the like cornerstone fans keeping Disney afloat through this process.
So I, the next day after seeing it, immediately went on Box Lunch and was like, okay, why have you been bullshitting? I had the Maria Rimbaud and the Goose the Cat Funko Pop sitting in my cart. I was like, why are you bullshitting? Just buy it now. Immediately did that. And then we were at lunch yesterday and somebody posted a pair of Captain Marvel Mickey ears.
And oh, just my like, God, are you kidding me?
Immediately
okay, the expression on your face yesterday, Shanna, was priceless sitting right next to you when you were looking at that. It was amazing.
I was like, nope. I was like, bye. It's happening.
I'm already planning a trip to Disneyland to meet Carol. Yes. Whenever I tell my partner this, he rolls his eyes, but it's still happening.
Okay, just let me know when you go so that I can go as well.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a group. Like, there's going to be a, what is it? It's a whiz bang. This is what we call a group of Carol Corps. There'll be a whiz bang of people all going and bombarding the poor Carol actor at once.
Look, I went to Disneyland to see T'Challa when he was there. So why would I not go to see Carol?
Hell yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You guys are the best nerds. I love you both.
I keep seeing stuff and it's taking everything in me not to buy everything. I saw that really ugly Goose the Cat, like plushie that they have at the Disney store.
Oh yeah. I own it already. The one that when you squeeze it, it does the blah.
Yes.
Oh no.
It's glorious. It's not super plush, right? Like it's hard. It's hard so that they have they can have the mechanism on the inside to make the blah happen. But, I bought it Wednesday night so that I could take it to the theater with me. Also, so, I already have the Build-A-Bear.
Of course you do. What if cats are snuggly, but Flurkin are not actually snuggly? So that's just real in-world design.
I feel like Fury would have been able to tell the difference.
I mean, maybe. Did he seem like a cat person before, though? He does.
I'm like, he did. Must have.
He's like the biggest cat person ever, whereas we know in real life and in the comics, Captain Marvel is not the biggest cat fan, not because she doesn't like them, but Brie Larson herself is, like, deathly allergic to cats.
Oh.
Yeah. So hilarious. when she would hold Goose, the cat, acting cat, after she would put him down again, or her, they would have to come in and wipe her hands with wipes because she was so allergic to the cat, which is a sad way to live your life. But like, I feel like Sam Jackson made up for all of that by snuggling all the cats as much as possible.
He was so
yeah,
excited.
Absolutely.
So that's funny. I really do wish. So in the comics, Carol is a huge Star Wars fan and the cat is being Chewy. And I don't know why they couldn't. I mean, Disney owns all of the things. The cat to be named Chewie.
There have already been Star Wars references in the MCU, so we know it exists. Like in one of the early movies, somebody is wearing a Star Wars T-shirt. So like we know that Star Wars fandom exists in the MCU. I was also confused by that choice.
I mean, come on, we know that Ant-Man is a member of the Star Wars fan club, obviously, and his favorite character is Princess Leia.
There's a part in one of the comics that's so funny when Carol is stopped by some guards and she's like, "We are not the droids you're looking for."
Yes. You know, I don't know what the decision-making process was behind calling Chewie Goose in the movie, but I do like the Top Gun reference. Mm-hmm. So A+ on choosing a flight-related thing. But come on, Chewie is the best co-pilot ever.
Exactly. Yeah. And now I look at my cat Strange, just so everyone knows.
Every day. You can never be too careful.
Like, I'm not convinced my cat is not a Flurkin.
Yes, no, especially when she just starts like coming for the eyes, coming for the face. I'm like, you Flurkin, get out of here.
I wish Anita were here. She has some opinions on Goose slashing Fury's eye and that being how he loses use of that eye. She thinks that Goose wouldn't have actually done that to Fury because they had a bond, and that he, like, we should never know how Fury loses the use of that eye, that it should always be a mystery. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. But I refute that by every cat owner has been scratched by their cat, and a sentient being like a Flerken, would totes do it in a little bit of like, wow, that was rude. I'm going to scratch you now so you know that I mean business.
Well, also every person who owns a cat has been scratched by their cat and come up with a lie about what really happened to them.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. Yep.
Like, actually, I got into a fight with somebody you would not believe.
Yeah, you should totally see the other guy.
While your cat sits to the side and just like gives you a side eye. All right. Any last thoughts on Captain Marvel? I saw Black Panther 5 times, so I have to either equal or beat that with this one.
I agree. I volunteer as tribute. I'll go with you again.
Yes.
Last thoughts on Captain Marvel. If you're listening to this and you got to this long way into the podcast and you haven't read the comics yet, go back, do some searching for Captain Marvel Volume 1, Higher, Further, Faster, More, and read it, and then just dive in. Get the rest. The run is completely worth seeking out and reading. Marvel does not make it super easy, but maybe with the movie doing really well, they can take it back to reprints to make it available in every local comic book store. But if you liked the movie, or even if you were like, it's pretty okay, I guess, the Captain Marvel stuff was good, go read the comics. I guarantee you, you'll get something great out of it.
And if you cannot find the actual physical ones, Comixology is having a sale. But I also understand, you know, I'm all about support your local comic book shop. So
also try your local library.
Yes.
The libraries do buy copies of the comics and it counts as sales towards, you know, the writer and artist and the whole creative team. They get a little cut of that.
And they track circulation. So the more people borrow those books, the more of those books they will have.
Yes.
And if you happen to be in the Bay Area, Berkeley has a fantastic library system with a ton of graphic novels. And it might not be in stock in the library right now, but they have a request system and you can put your name down and they'll just send you an email when it's ready for you to pick up. It's the best.
Yep.
I think my last thoughts on the movie are definitely read the comics if you haven't yet. If for no other reason, then you'll kind of understand why fans like me were so excited to see the beats that they hit in the movie, because the beats that they chose to hit were so meaningful. Also, having reread Volume 1 right before I saw the movie, I should have known about Jude Law, because looking back on it, he looks, at the end of the movie, he looks almost exactly like the way Yon-Rogg is portrayed at the end of Volume 1. And so, like, that, I should have known. I should have known. But also, for me, some of the things that really brought joy to me were the Easter eggs. So like the Kevin Smith Easter egg, the Pulp Fiction Easter egg, which I like could kiss the internet for bringing to my attention because I missed it. Like just like Kelly Sue, and there's so many more. And I see new ones every time I go see the movie. And those are the things I think to me really indicate how much care and love went to the movie. And it goes so far for me, not the least which because Moritz was the first time I ever saw Stan Lee anyway.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't even want to get into that because about this time last year, I was, you know, making tearful videos about Kevin Smith and how happy I was that he was still with us. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's like to have him and Stan, like, in this, I don't remember if they said that Stan already filmed his Endgame one or not. But to
Kevin
know that
said
this
that,
is,
there's, that this wasn't his last cameo. So okay. The assumption is that the last cameo is Endgame.
Yeah. So just to know that this was one of the last moments and to have it be not just an homage to Stan, but also an homage to Kevin. Like, I was actually angry with my friends who had already seen it. And I was like, I actually need you to warn me next time because I was not prepared at all.
So, Shanna, what I hear you saying is that you and I should rewatch Mallrats and then do a podcast episode on Mallrats 20 years later.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Done.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you both for joining me. This has been just awesome. I think we're going to do about 3 or 4 spoiler reviews on the network, various configurations of people, because all of us just want to talk about this movie so much.
Talk about Ben Mendelsohn at all.
Oh, look.
So good.
Again.
Anyway, yeah, Carlos so
is
good.
Back and Ben Mendelsohn is fine. He can get it. yeah, there's just so much to talk about with this film. But thank you for my 2 Carol Core experts. I love bringing on different people and new voices, so I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm recording another one of these on Sunday. Me and the doctor will also be doing a wrap up of the first season of The Passage. And yeah, Supergirl, if it hasn't already dropped, will probably drop soon. So there is a ton of stuff coming out on the network right now, and we just appreciate you for listening and enjoying our ramblings and musings on all things nerdy. So thank you.